SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, top of hour three on this Monday, and one of the best stories of the weekend, and it had lots of potential, and I think the expectation was that Escape Clause would do well and likely win the La Quiñata, and that makes it fun to have this discussion because Don Schnell, who's been winning races for a long time in Manitoba, it comes down with this five-year-old mare. We'd already seen her at Del Mar in the fall and at Santa Anita in the Frankel. Puts her back on the dirt and wins the historic long-running La Quiñata. Don, congratulations. A great way to start the year.
Yeah, it sure is. Thanks a lot.
You know, I saw some quotes from you, too, that you really felt that the – even though it was on the grass, that she showed that that she was on this level. And that's a question you ask when you bring a horse like this down and face the open company graded stake types.
Yeah, I've been going to Santa Anita, not in recent years, but earlier on. And I tell people I took little water pistols over there, and they weren't really squirting that good, and they fire back with machine guns. And this time I took a machine gun over, and she proved she's the real McCoy.
Well, she's now 19 for 28, and take us back a little bit with her and the early portion of her career, because you ran her in big spots. It feels like you felt that she had real talent from early on.
Yeah, she did. As a 2 year old, she ran good. Actually, she was 2 year old of the year up in Manitoba, and then she progressed as a three-year-old and had a good campaign, and but now she's starting to just get better with age and better with seasoning, and she loves to run. And when we first started shipping around, she was a little hesitant, but now she loves to go and loves to see new racetracks, and we shipped her around to so many different tracks, and she's kind of happy to go now.
Well, and you mentioned that as a young horse, up against in some cases, the local types, and you ran her against the boys right from the get-go. She was second in the Manitoba Derby. Give us a little bit of the other elements of this, because you did go to Zia and you tried her against top competition in the Zia Park Oaks. You really aren't afraid, I think, with her, and I'd also like to know what prompted the grass tries. That was a pretty ambitious campaign this last fall.
Yeah, probably. Most people wouldn't do that. It's quite a step to go, especially to Southern California, and then try grass. But she just gave an indication that she might like the grass, just the way she trains, and we thought while she was good, we'd give her one shot on the grass and see how she does, and she wound up winning it. Although it was through disqualification, she did win it, and we tried her a mile and three-eighths, which probably was a little far. That's a little ambitious, but she ran her heart out and ran third, beat a length. And then, of course, the first trip at Santa Anita was a really troubled trip. It was a horrific trip. I really felt she should have won that, but didn't get the opportunity to run. And so anyways, we put Tyler Bays on this time, and he followed instructions to a T, and he was very impressed after the race. He says, "Please put me back on her." So
she's really, whether it's the turf or whether it's been the portions of her career where she was going one turn, she's really proven very versatile. And the wet track, you don't mind at all if it comes up, because she's really been explosive the times that she's hit a wet track.
Yeah, I don't think a wet track is her absolute favorite. I mean, I asked Tyler, you know, and he said that the track isn't bad in Santa Anita. It was kind of sloppy, wet fast, and he said they're getting a hold of it. The other time she ran in the mud, there was a path on the rail that I'd walked the track the morning before, and there was a good path on the rail, so she got herself situated on the rail, and the rest of them were slugging through the mud, and she got the best path. But anyways, she does run on different surfaces, and she's run on turf, dirt, mud, different kinds of tracks, sand, but she just, she never, ever cheats. She tries her heart out every time, and you got to love a horse like that.
Well, and of course, she was a modest purchase, and it's got to be just particularly special for you. I mentioned you've been winning races for a long time. I think you're in your mid-60s, and to be in this position with a horse like this, and you've had other major type stake horses. Majestic Horizon, probably the one that comes to mind in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, he was a nice horse, too. I won 10 races with him in 1 year, and he was a nice horse. But I did take him to Southern Cal, and he could not compete. So I would have to say Escape Clause is by far the best horse I've ever trained. I have a lot of friends who are trainers, and they say take in this moment and enjoy it, because we've trained for, a lot of them have trained for 30, 40, 50 years and never had a horse this good. So we're sure enjoying her, and she's never let us down.
And by all rights, I mean, even though she's, I mean, just a young five right now, I mean, it just feels like she's thriving with, with the work. She's a horse that doesn't really need time off either. It feels like, you get the sense that, she'd rather be doing this than getting time off.
Well, I just finished hand walking her this morning, and honestly, she could run today again, and she'd probably win. That's how tough she is. She's special, she's special because she does have some talent, and she's got try, but she's also very, very tough. And, to ship a few hours before the race over to Santa Anita from Phoenix, and then just get a light rest and run as good as she did, that's special. She is a special horse, and I know a lot of people are calling her Cinderella and that, and it's kind of neat because, she's the kind of horse that the average working guy, the average owner with claimers loves, because it goes to show that sometimes you can pay little for a horse and get a good horse like this.
Well, it should be noted that there was a little bit of history. I mean, she's got that full brother. Danger Rules was a nice horse.
Yeah, he was. The mother, Danger Pay, got her name because she was crazy. She was absolutely nuts. And I remember in 1987, I was at the Belmont with Ali Sheba with Jack Landberg. And they were talking about mares, and Woody Stevens said, whenever you get a crazy mare breeder, she won't throw a crazy colt, she'll throw a colt that can run. And I've always remembered that. So in this case, it followed true. A crazy mare did throw a runner.
Well, Bobby Frankel would agree, because, of course, there was nobody nuttier than Toussaint, and look what she ended up producing. That's going to stick in people's minds, Don, and that is a great story. I'm glad you brought up JVB, and because I was going to ask you to kind of recount your origins in the game.
Yeah, well, I did spend some time with Jack Bamberg, and I was in Hollywood Park. I was stabled there, different times, and with just a small stable with 3-4 horses. And I was even at Santa Anita years ago, but didn't have the stock to win with. And but learned a lot of things. One of my favorite guys was Charlie Whittingham, and we went and looked at his statue in Santa Anita at the paddock there. And it's just brings back good old memories. Charlie was such a great guy and loved him to death.
Now, there's really no better story than this. You know, the horsemen that, you know, that are known certainly locally, and you've had a lot of success at Assiniboia and, you know, really wherever you've gone, and to come across a horse like this that you tabbed and have turned into a graded stake winner is certainly special, and it feels like there's some big things yet ahead. I know one of the things you're going to look at is a try in the Beholder Mile.
Well, I've got different options. Love Santa Anita. It's my favorite track in the whole world. Been to a lot of tracks, but never, up until now, never had a horse that could compete. And I'm thinking about bringing a couple more over and spending a little more time there. I just love it there, and hopefully we can win another one there with Escape Cloth.
Well, a horse you bought for $3,000 and change and is now up to close to $500,000 in earnings. It's a wonderful story, and I think there's plenty of chapters to write yet.
Well, I hope so. I hope, she come back so good, as she always does, off a race. The only time ever she was tired was the 1 3/8, and like I said, she ran her heart out there, and that was probably asking a little much for her, but only to get beat one length, it wasn't bad. Like this morning, I guarantee she could run again today and win. That's just how tough she is. So she is kind of special.
Well, and honestly, when you throw those three turf races in and you think of them as how much benefit you get from a training standpoint from the turf tries, the legging her up and you know, tightening her up, that's basically what you get here, this explosive win going back to the dirt. So not only did you pick up some nice checks and some graded stake, not just the placements, but of course, as we mentioned, you know, in the Catherine Crosby, you got put up. She's really, from a lot of standpoints, turning herself into a very valuable mare, Don. There's going to probably be a tough decision here when the racing days are through about breeding her or keeping her or selling her.
Well, it's already starting to be a tough decision. I'm getting phone calls. Got one from Florida, one from Kentucky, already this morning, actually one from California, and they're throwing big numbers at us, and I don't know. It's tough, but I definitely want to keep her, and maybe in the fall reconsider, and if somebody's interested in her as a brood mare or racing potential this fall, she might come up for sale, but that's not in the near future.
Well, in the immediate future are plenty more opportunities, and that's a division, the Distaffer division out there. Certainly, she's a welcome addition to the division. So you're based at Turf Paradise. You're back in Phoenix, and we'll be waiting and watching for Escape Clause. She's going to win a lot of fans, Don, and I'm just delighted for you. Congratulations again.
Well, thank you very much. We get treated very well when we go to Santa Anita, and I was in Jeff Metz's barn, and Marjorie, his foreman looked after us so good, and so we're very pleased with Santa Anita.
Well, and probably looking forward to that return trip, and we'll hopefully I'll be out for Big Cap week and probably Santa Anita Derby week, and chances are she's going to perform on one of those Saturdays. So look forward to talking again soon. Continued success, Don Schnell.
Okay, thanks a million.
Not at all. Don Schnell, everybody, who here at the age of 65, I believe, has crafted the best horse of his training career, and that's got to make everybody feel good. The stick-to-itiveness, making a living and winning races and all, but then coming across a horse like this that he picked out for $3,500 at the Western Canada, I'm going to forget the name of that sale, but $3,500, and she's made close to $500,000, and I'm sure that they're throwing lots of big six-figure numbers at him right now. We'll take a timeout here, and speaking of numbers, Nick Tamro is going to join us. We'll talk to Nick for the segment, at least up till Todd Pletcher joins us at about 11:40. I want to recap what we did on Friday, and we're going to continue to have these discussions. We're going to call them game builders and trying to help people understand ticket structure and bankroll management. And I made this a resolution for 2019. Back after this, Nick Tamro back with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah, Express Bet. Give me 12 grand to win on the 9 at Gulfstream. Yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey! Hang up the phone! You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus Big Bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better than ever. All you gotta do is register for free at ExpressBet.com. Then you'll earn entries for every bet you make until January 14th. The more you play, the more chances you have to win.
And you win a $12,000 bet on the Pegasus?
And a VIP trip to Gulfstream with airfare, hotel, tickets, it's all included. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got some more practicing to do.
Yeah.
So, ExpressBet, you still there? Good. Like I was saying,
ExpressBet is the official online wagering partner of the Pegasus World Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to bet today. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Pennsylvania rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
One look, lasso, people on the way, she looks at me, held up, let down. She sings me silent melodies, hair whip, tight lip. I feel calling now for you, cold sweat, blood spit. Can't stand the way she looks at me. Don't you tell me who you are.
We're back in the race. About 20 minutes into hour three, want to do at least a quick recap from Friday's conversation with Nick Tamro. We're going to call them game builders. And, you know, we kind of pulled it together. You know, I threw it at Nick on Thursday going into the weekend and asked him to kind of take an approach toward bankroll management and translating handicapping. And handicapping opinions are not easy, but they're kind of formulaic for everybody in their own way. It's then what do I do with my handicapping opinion, and how do I structure tickets better? And this is the area that so many players say, I wish I could get help in this area. Nick is as good as anybody out there that does this, and we welcome him back. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And Nick, the way in which we kind of structured the play and, you know, discussed the seventh and eighth from Aqueduct on Saturday, it was not an ideal scenario, and it isn't necessarily where you would, you know, heavily leverage a double opinion, you know, based on a horse like Gold for the King. But actually, the general theme of what we were trying to do kind of worked, and there were actually some interesting things that happened, particularly in the stake in the eighth race, where Gold for the King was pocketed, and Junior Alvarado put himself in a jackpot that he couldn't get out of. Talk a little bit about how you watch these two races unfold, and what we can take from it.
Yeah, you know, without being overly specific and paying too much attention to maybe some of the questions that were raised on social media after our conversation and after you recapped it with some of the actual numerics of it Saturday morning, the discussion centered on two very competitive races, well, at least one very, very competitive race, and then one that looked like it would be relatively formful on paper, and our endeavor was to highlight some of the horses that at least I felt were the ones that you would put in primary positions in multi race plays, whether you wanted to take a daily double opinion from that and make daily double wagers. That was a different issue. The discussion was about, of course, how you would maybe weight an AA opinion in a double sequence where you wanted to play them. In fact, I made it quite clear that you would not put in wagers that you thought were going to be money losers, and you wouldn't put in any that you thought were just going to be slight profits. You'd put in ones that really hammered home what your best opinion was, and maybe it was a sequence where, because Gold for the King was going to be a bit shorter price in the second leg, you might just play two or three doubles into him. And I think, knowing the way the public was approaching House Limit a little bit in the seventh race, you probably might have scaled back from him. You might have zoned in a little bit more on Mr. Dougie Fresh, who offered some value until the last few clicks when he was really hammered down to favoritism at 7-2. And otherwise, I didn't think the race unfolded terribly different from the way we thought. Of course, with Stony Bennett running a really, really brave race and holding off Mr. Dougie Fresh late after kind of going through some of the battle early, the pace did not materialize the way I expected, and that certainly changed the outcome. Look, I'm going to make this as clear as possible, and hopefully anybody who comments on it will actually listen this time around instead of just taking to social media and following along people that that didn't actually listen. I'm not going to lead the public to make losing wagers. It's obvious. I have a pretty significant record of making winning wagers. I certainly place plenty of losing wagers myself, but the idea that I would want somebody to put in a bunch of daily double bets that are money losers is ridiculous, and is not at all what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is help people take your opinion, put it in an ABC-style matrix, and then let that be a guide for making a multi-race bet. And in fact, we talked at length on Friday about how sometimes the delineation between a horse that you might label a B and one that you might label a C is actually very small. And you might want to find yourself staying away from scenarios where you're leveraging that opinion a little bit too much, because you can easily lose money or lose the opportunity at making more money when you do that. And I think you'll find yourself in situations where a C wins and he might edge one of your Bs and the race runs and you think to yourself, boy, I really didn't have much of a difference in opinion on those two horses. In fact, there was very, very little separating them. I think that in order to effectively utilize this approach in a daily double pool, you obviously have to be very narrow in one end and open yourself up to just a few possibilities in the other. And I would encourage anybody that wants to learn a little bit more about making successful daily double bets to go look at some of the success that people had in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I mean, look at some of the things that they did well. It's not any mystery. It's something that is relatively simple. You know, my friend Blake Jesse, who finished ninth, made a $400 double on Friday of Line of Duty and I forgot the horse. It was a 14 on the outside in that race that was bet, the Aiden O'Brien horse, into game winner. You know, and there were horses that were relatively low prices, and that double returned him $3,040. He almost got quadruple his money, ended up finishing ninth in the whole tournament. That's an effective double bet. That was a sequence that was formful, so you shouldn't really be dissuaded from doing something like that in that type of environment. What the exercise is about and what we're going to continue to talk about on a weekly basis is taking your handicapping opinion after you've structured your bets and then making bets. Or, I'm sorry, taking your handicapping opinion and structuring bets from that. That's the whole goal. And I think that's where a lot of players get a little bit hung up. And that's where we want to see anybody maybe be able to improve what they're doing a little bit. So that's the goal. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about these on a weekly basis with pick threes, with ultimately with pick fours, maybe even pick fives, as much as you can handicap a four or five race sequence 24 hours in advance. But let it be well known and very clear. And I mean, anybody out there who has an objection to it, I'm quite visible on Twitter. There was an awful lot of subtweeting. I mean, all I ask is that I will take all the criticism in the world. Just tag me. You know, give me an opportunity to say something back. I'm happy to do it. I've never turned down anybody asking a question or wanting to have a conversation. And quite honestly, if it means that your show is reaching that many more people, then it's an accomplishment for both of us.
Well, and of course, when it came to the handicapping side, yeah, there are some things, there are always some things that you, when you do in advance and when you have a discussion and when you write things up, that by the time the race unfolds, things can be different. One of the oddities of what happened in the allowance race, kind of, we were operating a little under the assumption that Linda Rice might scratch Stoney Bennett. And then she ends up not only running, Mike Luzzi, you know, gets him around and wins. And there were some things that happened in this race that, including sadly Westerdale going wrong, that and not making it and having to be euthanized. Westerdale, we kind of, you know, you kind of expected him to prompt the pace. You could look at this race and just, there was no expectation that somebody would win this wire to wire. I mean, that was a unusual result from that, and that's why Stoney Bennett was at least a C, because you were considering the possibility that if certain things went a certain way, there was a possibility that a horse like Stoney Bennett could wire, and that's actually what happened. And then you had a ride that you know, if you bet gold for the king heavily, you have to shrug off. But you were in position with Honor Up, who we made very clear, if gold for the king was a triple A or a double A, Winston's Chance and Honor Up, they were solid A's. So, you know, the general consensus or the general approach, from a positioning standpoint, was not wrong in and of itself. That's sort of a sidebar to what, you know, the overarching theme is.
Right, exactly. And yeah, when you're, as if it's not difficult enough to try and structure a play 24 hours in advance in a race where you're really feeling in all likelihood like the main speed is going to scratch, you know, you're trying to do that then 24 hours later when you're still under the impression that it not only could happen, but you don't really know. You know, you're taking the approach that it'll be an honestly run race, and it didn't necessarily end up panning out that way. And look, I mean, sometimes you don't get it right, so it happens. And this was a situation where I discounted the chances, Sony Bennett's chances, and certainly looked when they turned for home, like liking Mr. Dougie Fresh was a good opinion. And Gold for the King was a bad ride away from winning rather handily. I mean, he was clearly best while third, and I think Junior Alvarado will probably beg Charlie Baker to give him another chance. It was a mistake made by who otherwise is a very, very good rider. So, yeah, that's racing luck. I mean, but, you know, of course, the purpose of it all, as I alluded to before and as we talked about on Friday, is to get people to take their handicapping opinion and just have some ideas on how to bet. And there are going to be times where you're effective with it. There are going to be times where you're ineffective with it. And if you're at least stimulating the conversation, then that's something that I know both of us want to do, and we'll continue to do it.
Absolutely. And the ranking of horses in each race, and then the unit amount that I put in parentheses so that, you know, people can see, you know, the way in which, you know, you come down from leveraging your best opinion. And I want to note that the best opinion isn't necessarily the most likely winner, you know, connected to each other. Or if you're betting exact, is the most likely winner and the second most likely winner. That's not what we mean. We mean the way in which you handicap, and that invariably should include a valuation, meaning, you know, this is the potential result that can bring me back the most money. And once you have that determination, then utilizing your bankroll to maximize that potential result. And so that's what this is about. And so, you know, the 3-6 with the 2 for 10 units, the 8-2 for 6 units, etc., and then, you know, trickling down 6-4 and 5-3 and then 2-1. The idea is for you to start thinking differently about the amount of money you bet. And, you know, we discussed this going into Breeders' Cup as well. This is the portion, I think, the majority of casual players or aspiring serious players, I think this is the area we struggle with the most.
Absolutely. And I think as you're trying to put together something that in terms of a multi-race play, you're gonna have to incorporate some type of structure here. I mean, if you find yourself making a lot of 3x4x4 caveman pick three plays, then, I mean, you may hit at a relatively decent rate, but you're not gonna make enough of a profit. You're spreading yourself a little too thin there, and there has to be some type of structure, maybe where you narrow that down to 2x1x2, and you play that for $5, and then sort of break it down from there. It's all gonna depend on your bankroll. It's gonna depend on your opinion. And in a situation like the seventh race on Saturday, where we felt pretty strongly about Gold for the King winning the eighth, you're probably going to play your doubles of the main two horses, Why Not and Mr. Dougie Fresh, in to Gold for the King for a certain amount. You're going to play them into the two backup A opinions for a certain amount, and you're probably not going to spend a whole lot of money on any other backups. I didn't really think that Stony Bennett was going to win the race, so I'm not going to go spend a bunch of money trying to find a way to get him to win, you know, and to make a 150% on the original investment or whatever. It didn't even get to that number. So obviously the point, of course, being be prudent when you're making your wagers, and in a pool like the double, where you can see probables and get a sense of what things are going to pay, let that dictate where you go in terms of wagering dollars. I mean, the idea that you would do that when you have that window into it is kind of crazy. And in fact, I know from personal experience, I admittedly don't play very many daily doubles, and anybody who wonders about that can take a look at my Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge wagering history and see that it certainly, they were not very prominent at all on any of my tickets. There was one entry where I used them quite a bit more, but the successful entry had virtually none. And I do, my plays primarily are either larger multi-race plays, and in these contests, exactas and tries, and exactas have really taken on more of my attention, because you can see the probables. Now you can see what you're working with, and you can base your opinion on what kind of return you can get. So I think that's ultimately, when you're making your own decision in terms of wagering, that's what you want to really keep at the forefront of your mind once you've completed your handicapping and maybe allowed the odds to sway how you might feel in just a fractional margin.
Well, and we will keep that in mind, and I want you to, in fact, as a follow-up on Friday, I want to answer Scott Jeffries' question even more. You know, Scott engaged in a terrific back and forth on Facebook, and, you know, asked, you know, do you wager on combinations that might lose money? And so we can maybe incorporate the board watching and watching the probables as part of, you know, the weighted decision making. That is something that is not easy either. I mean, I never even knew it was occurring till I watched people charting exacta will pays at Saratoga. I mean, 25 years ago, I asked a guy, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, these are the probables, and I'm keeping track, and I'll make, you know, my decisions. Finally, when I go to the window, I'll make decisions based on what those are." And that, I, you know, this is the layers of the onion. So, Nick, let you get going. We'll talk on Friday. Thanks very much. Game Builders with Nick Tamaro, and we'll do them Fridays, typically at 10 o'clock, and then we'll recap them as well to try to help everybody enjoy the game more by hitting more often and making more money. Nick, thanks a lot.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks a lot. Talk to you Friday.
You got it. NTAM1215. Let's take a break. And when we come back, Todd Pletcher is going to join us. We'll talk about Bella Vase, but there's plenty of other things going on in that Pletcher camp, and we'll find out where the three-year-olds are going to pop up. And, of course, Bulletin rumored for a trip to Royal Ascot, and everybody so excited about seeing Todd again in a morning jacket and top hat. That's priceless. I mean, he looks like Abe Lincoln if he got any taller. And we'll find out about how Audible's coming in, and it feels like he's doing well. Audible's going to be what? No worse, no better, I suppose, than third choice. After City of Light and Accelerate, but Pattern Recognition's going to take money, right? And Who else is a candidate to maybe interject? Well, Gunavera. Gunavera's got his the wild-eyed followers that bet him, at the very least, bet him to be third as a reverse tri-key, right? Todd Pletcher, next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Talking away.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to noon on this Monday, and happy to be able to wish a happy new year and congratulations to Todd Pletcher off of Bella Vase's win in the Marshawas River on Saturday. Todd, well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You know, I've asked you this before because you do get horses like this occasionally that are bought, from previous connections, and you know, you got to get a read on them. I mean, obviously she's an accomplished mare. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you got and how quickly you seized up on her. And I thought this was a very promising effort.
Yeah, we were really encouraged by it. We had her in for a short time last winter after she was purchased by Mr. Bordolazzo and Steve Young, and she came in and she just looked like she needed a little time off. So to Jerry Bordolazzo's credit, you know, he's very patient with her. We sent her to my dad's place in Ocala and gave her a good break. And since she came back this summer, she's summer and late fall, you know, she's really, really come on. And Jimmy Toner did a great job with her early on, and you know, we're just fortunate to get an opportunity to have her.
Hey, you know, knowing the way the Phillips family operates, I mean, to be able to buy into this family, to buy into, you know, the great mare Fountainhead of Darby Dan, that's a big opportunity, and it obviously speaks to, you know, some of the long-term interests of the Bordolazzo operation.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of what was very attractive about her is, you know, that's like you said, such a tremendous family and one of Darby Dan's best. And so that was part of what made her attractive, and, you know, getting a great at stake win with her, you know, was... plan is to continue to race her through this year and then sort of assess where we are at the, you know, come November time.
Mr. Pletcher? Hello, Mr. Pletcher?
Yeah, lost him.
Yeah, looks like we lost Steve. I'm going to go to a commercial break while I try to reconnect with him. If you could just stand by for me, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Win on the 9 at Gulf Street.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey! Hang up the phone. You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus big bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better yeah, there we than go. Ever. All you gotta do is register for...
Sorry about that. That was me. I think we got dropped on my end, and... Todd, I think, still there.
I'm here.
Did you keep on? Did you basically take over as you could have just,
you know,
hosted the show?
Poetically,
you had enough experience.
So, no,
sorry about that.
That we were,
where did you leave off?
Yeah, we were talking about Bella Vay, and you know, what our plans are for the rest of the year is, you know, to continue to run. And then I think Jerry will make a decision come November time what he wants to do after that. But we were very pleased to get that graded stake win, and she came out of it in great shape. So we're excited about her year coming up.
Well, and that was some nice riding too. I mean, Javier had a great afternoon. He swept both of the graded stakes. We talked up to Shug earlier this morning, but that was a particularly patient ride because he was pocketed and he had the horses all around her. She didn't seem to mind, and then he dove to the rail when he had to make a decision. And really, Javier deserves a lot of the credit for the way things turned out.
Yeah, he rode a great race, and we were beneficiaries of a good post position and caught a firm turf course this time, which we did not last time. But, you know, I think in addition to catching ground that she likes a little better, I do think Javier learned a couple of things from her last race that was beneficial when he rode her this time. And, you know, like you said, he couldn't have ridden her any better than that.
Well, we'll look forward to the rest of the winter down in South Florida when it comes to Bella Vase and what lies ahead. And we did hear, with that little cutout, we did hear some Pegasus references. And let's slip that into, Todd, you picked up Flavian Pratt, which is a nice addition for Audible. And you seem very pleased with what's transpired, you know, since the stake try on the wet track. You know, got beat under the circumstances, but you feel very good about Audible heading toward the Pegasus a week from Saturday.
Yes, I mean, we're really happy with the way he's been training. His breezes have been particularly good. Seems like he bounced out of the Harlan's Holiday in good shape. And, you know, we all, by all means, wanted to win the Harlan's Holiday, but we also had the Pegasus as a main focus. And, you know, track condition that day was a little bit tricky, but most importantly, he got a race under his belt. This will be his third start off the layoff. And, you know, I think the dynamics of this race should be more to his liking, and it should, if everyone shows up that's intending to, should be a contested early pace, and he seems to be at his best when there's a good pace in front of him. So this is going to be a super difficult race by all means, but we're very, very happy with the way he's coming into it.
Well, it certainly, you know, you got to feel like this is a spot that if he's going to step forward and reprise, you know, what we saw from him last winter, you know, heading on to the Derby Trail, this would be a great spot for it.
Absolutely.
Well, Audible, and how did you? It's interesting that Flavian Pratt ends up. How did the tie-in come? Did Derek Lawson seek out? Was he kind of reading the tea leaves, knowing what was going on with City of Light?
No, actually, you know, Elliot and I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, and we knew the potential for a conflict with Javier was there, and, you know, with a lot of the guys that we traditionally use, you know, on the East Coast, having other commitments, you know, there wasn't really any of the guys that we normally use on the East Coast available. So when Ellie and I were talking about possibilities, he was keen to talk about Flavian, and I think part of that was you know, his relationship with him in Battle of Midway, winning the Breeders' Cup Mile for that team. And so, you know, obviously Flavian's a top class rider, and he's riding in great form at the moment. So felt like that he was our best option at this point.
Well, no, especially the horse that's going to come from off the pace. You know, he's got that turf touch. You know, that might suit very well. Flavian Pratt, turf or dirt.
Yeah, I think he's a very smart rider, and you know, the real key for us is going to be for the pace to unfold the way that we hope it does, and for him to ride impatiently, if that's the case.
Well, let's talk about some of the young horses that you're being patient with as well. And we're looking forward, you know, to the start in earnest of the Derby Trail, whether it's at Tampa, and certainly you got horses that I know you'll send toward the Sam Davis and the Tampa Bay Derby. We've got Bulletin that seems like he's headed toward a Royal Ascot try. Let's catch up. Maybe start with, how about Moretti?
Well, Moretti is he's based at Belmont with the Withers scheduled to be his next start. He broke his maiden last time going a mile and an eighth. So kicking around the options, we felt like keeping him in a mile and an eighth was in his best interest. And then, you know, after the Withers, he'll probably make his way down to Palm Beach Downs and, you know, prepare for his next start from there. But we felt like the mile and an eighth is really what he's looking for, and in the next round of preps, the Withers is sort of the only place that offers that. So we're looking forward to giving him a stakes try.
Very nice. And there's quite a few that'll have to make those, you know, logical next steps. I mentioned Tampa. You sent So Alive over there for an allowance. Is he a Sam Davis player?
That's our intention. You know, we put some blinkers on him for that race, and I thought it made a difference. He seemed to be a little more focused, although you could still see that he's figuring things out. I liked the way he finally leveled off the last 60 or 70 yards and finished up strongly, galloped out very well, and you know, he's come out of it in good order. So the Sam Davis is his next target, and I think he's one that's wanting to run further, being a half to Vino Rosso. You know, we're thinking he's going to improve with more distance and a little more seasoning experience. So so far so good.
Well, and you mentioned Vino Rosso and So Alive, of course. John Gunther, who's seemingly, I would say, a likely Eclipse winner for Breeder, and this is Gunther and Bob LaPenta. Purchased and campaigning So Alive. How about Federal Case, who has come your way, and a horse actually that before the holiday break came up, we were sifting through some of those 2-year-olds that got reshuffled, and where's he going to turn up?
Right now we're looking at the Holy Bull. He was able to win a pretty competitive one of the van mile allowance at Gulfstream since we last spoke, and it was a good effort. He's come out of it well, and our original plan was to maybe take a look at the Southwest, but with that not being until February 18th, we felt like he's going to be climbing the walls by then. So we've targeted the Holy Bull now, and I think he'll continue to improve with more distance. We're excited about the way he's looking.
You know, I'll come back around to La Forza, who ran in the Runyon and the New York bred. But I want to ask about a horse that may be one of the ones, Todd, from the barn that is a little under the radar yet, and that's Cutting Humor, who I happen to see that win at Calder, and I made a note, and I thought that he's got upside.
I agree totally with you. I thought that was sort of a better than looked effort. You know, he was hung out wide pretty much the whole way around there, and of course, has been training sharply. He's in an allowance race Friday at Gulfstream, going a mile and a 16th. We're looking forward to that. It, on paper, appears like it came up a very competitive race, as you'd expect this time of year at Gulfstream. But he's a colt that we've liked a lot. I think he started to put things together last time, and his training since then has been good. He's a well-bred horse from a good Claiborne family, and so we're thinking he might hopefully be one of our kind of sleepers of the group.
Well, and that, you know, it seems like there was a real rush at the end of last year after Breeders' Cup to determine that, oh, you know, the Todd's 2-year-olds, where are they? They were growing of their own. On their own timing.
They were basically Taking their time.
You know what? It doesn't
coming around at the right time.
Well, I was going to say, for all the criticism and the sort of over hyper sensitivity that people seem to want to heap on this, wouldn't you rather have them, coming around now than having, you've done it the other way too. You've had win early 2 year olds that basically peaked early. So this seems like a better option.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the bottom line is you have to do what the horses want to do, and sometimes you can't force them to be early when they're not, and you can't sometimes you can't hold them back when they are early. So, I have said a number of times, sometimes the worst thing you can have is a really hot hand for the Derby in December or January. But we've got a few that seem like they're coming around now, so we'll hope they continue and. Each round gets a little tougher, but in the next 30 to 45 days, I think, like everyone else, we're going to know a whole lot more about where we stand.
And on this topic, I mean, because I'm sure we're going to have plenty of opportunity to, to flesh out other horses, Empire of War, and so I mentioned La Forza, et cetera. And there's actually Hattie L, that Union Rags filly that looks like that she could be an Oaks type for Starlight. But is there anything, because I've kind of rattled it in my head, how much of this development arc might be a result of some change in buying practices in terms of buying horses that are more two-turn oriented and later developing? Is there anything that figures into it from that angle?
Oh, I think definitely. Some of our guys are going to the sales, they're looking specifically for these two-turn type horses, and naturally, because of that, you're going to be a little slower about bringing them around. You're not going to be cranking them up in April or May, and that's not what they're bred for, designed for. So, that's part of the overall strategy. And I think in general, two-year-old racing has changed quite a bit over the years, and a little less, you see less of the Derby type horses making their debuts in April, May, and June. When I first started training, you'd certainly see a lot of those same horses that would start off then would still be on the Derby trail. But I think everyone's strategy has changed a little bit with those type of horses.
Now, and you also you get into a new sets of stallions, and you got to adjust to what the horses are looking like. People assume that it's like a deck of cards, that you get what you get. It's not that simple. It has to do with clients. It has to do with their bloodstock people, and you can only work with what comes your way.
Correct. No, there's a lot of moving parts to the whole thing.
We're gonna head out, but you mentioned the races coming up this week, including Cutting Humor in that ninth race on Friday. Top of kind of password here. I'm going to mention a name and give me a one-word answer. Underestimate in the third on Friday.
I think she's got a solid chance. It looks like kind of a similar group to what she ran against last time, but I like the fact that she drew outside. She's a little bit intimidated inside most of the way last time.
On Thursday, Make a Little Mischief in the fifth.
I think she needed her last race. We ran her a mile and a 16th off quite a layoff, and she made the lead, and just I think she got a little bit tired the last part, so I would expect a step forward from her.
You got two. I haven't looked at the race yet, but Sea Shark and Stand Up.
Stand Up actually has improved quite a bit since we trained him on the turf. He was purchased last year at the OBS March sale and worked very well in the synthetic. Wasn't quite showing us on the dirt what we were hoping for when we put him on the grass. We saw a big improvement, and he gives me the impression if he can get away alertly that he'd be one that have a chance first out.
Well, the powerhouse partnership of Mike Rapoli and Eclipse with this Into Mischief colt out of the well-decorated mare. Well, Todd, I appreciate it. I also want to get back to you at some point about Bob McNair. We never had a chance to ask you to pay tribute to him, so we'll do that when we talk next.
Okay. All right, Steve.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You bet. Happy New Year to Todd and his team. We got a lot in there. Probably a few that we'll have to wait for next time. Nick Tamaro, Todd Pledger, Don Schnell. A lot of fun to have Don on with Escape Clause. John White, Shug McGee, Claude Ray, and Steve Shahanian joining us to appreciate Harvey Clark. And there'll be more. I heard from Fred Seitz as well later on. So we'll probably talk to Fred and Kieran McLaughlin and more. Have a great day, everybody. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. If you missed anything, some limited action today. I think just 4 tracks. Good luck. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.